Hot round! Red 7, Red 7, Red 7! Don!
What?
Red 7!
I don't know what Red 7 means.
Hot round!
I don't. What is hot round?
Will you just go stand on the other side, please?
Billy Bob! This is it! The man who got us here, you ready?
You don't think that lame ass play where I run downfield and act like I'm lost is gonna work, do you?
Then he pivots, fakes, chucks the big bomb halfway down the field to our hopefully still wide open tailback. I call it the annexation of Puerto Rico.
Booyah! That's what we call a sack lunch. Nom, 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 nom.
I need that ball. Get me the ball.
You need the ball.
Get me the ball.
Get you the ball.
Are you going to get me the ball?
I'll get you the ball.
I hope he didn't kill somebody.
Because we know when we add up all those inches, that's going to make the difference between winning and losing. Between living and dying.
I got a whole lot of money. Y'all it for me. Bottle key popping that water bag.
Welcome back into 11 Personnel, episode 146. Man, we've been doing this a while, Adam Luckett.
How many derbies have there been? 148? Was that 148th running?
Yeah, yeah. So we're catching up.
We're almost there. So you were recording on Wednesday afternoon. Are y'all recovered?
I'm sweaty right now, but recovered. I moved at last fall, and my office setup is in kind of like a sunroom. So there's no AC, but we have windows open and fan on. And it's already, even though it's mid-May, it's already feeling like summer in Louisville. Humid, muggy, just downright nasty. So it is helping me sweat out all the toxins in my body from the derby. What hurt more than anything, my legs. You know, I don't get a ride to the track. I just make a 1 mile walk, and doing that 3 days in a row, 2 miles a pop, and then just walking around the infield and everywhere around the track, it wears on you. I think I had some shin splints. So make me feel like I was going through growing pains again, right back in middle school.
It's a pretty eventful derby day. We had old three technique hits.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest long shot of long shots, a guy on the horse, I think, ran the perfect race.
Yeah.
I was pretty big on Epicenter. So yeah. I wasn't too thrilled when that happened.
Did you have Epicenter replaced though?
Yeah, I had a big across the board bet on Epicenter.
And that should have,
I want a good chunk of change, but it would have been a decent amount more. Obviously
it would have been, that would have been real nice, but I think I at least recouped my losses with that place bet. The three technique horse, that horse has came across my board before, and I bet it for the name, but I just, you know, wasn't paying attention. There was a lot going on. So we didn't have the most profitable derby weekend, but we didn't lose all of our money. So that's a win. That's what I call a win. Shout out to Sonny Leone and the trainer Eric Reed. Cool story. You love hearing stories like that. That's what makes horse racing fun, is having stories like that. And I tried to, it's hard to explain how big of a long shot it is if you don't know the inside baseball with horse racing, because
especially with the point system that they have.
I know it's hard for horses like that to get in, but like $30,000 claiming horses, those are horses that typically run on like random Tuesdays in July. And like people like my parents get in syndicates just to be part owners of $30,000 claimers. And I remember going out there on one of those random days to watch their horse run for the first time. And this horse led about like 30 lengths and then lost by 30 lengths. I mean, that's the kind of crapshoot you get with some of them. And they found a winner. They found a winner. And I love the clip of the trainer just like falling over in the paddock, just in disbelief that the horse won. I mean, just outstanding. So a fun time at Churchill Downs. I love to gripe about their prices and, you know, they're pricing out the common man, but it's still, I'm still there. They got me hook, line, sinker. I'll be there next year. But now that Derby's over, I that's how my seasons work. I kind of go from, you know, talking season in college football, NFL, of course, is throughout all of this, bowl season. Once bowl season's over, I can officially start getting in the college basketball mindset and watch, you know, a ton of games. We had a good college basketball regular season, NCAA tournament. Then you get the Masters. Once the Masters end, it's Derby time. And then now we're right in that recruiting talking season time. And we'll get to some of the recruiting later, but the big talking season points, nil in the transfer portal. It's got people all out of whack. We got Dabo Swinney, you know, having his typical hot takes. A lot of Ole Miss yells at clouds. And we even have the NCAA actually saying something. They had a strongly – I would describe it as a strongly worded memo to all of the NIL collective saying, hey, cut it out. Cut it out.
Yeah, NTA had their meetings, and it's a who's who. You know, your Ross Dellingers, Nicole Auerbachs. Some of the national people out there covering what's going on. And Colorado AD Rick George was one of the guys, I think, quoted in a couple stories, pretty much saying, you know, we have to stop all this. People are cheating. Like, they can't be out there cheating. It was really kind of a face for a bunch of schools behind the scenes calling, complaining to the NCAA. NCAA issues that statement last Wednesday or Thursday, I believe. So a few days ago, it's pretty much like they are going to be investigating these collectives, yada, yada, yada. But I read that as more as like a warning kind of thing. Like, okay, you know, it's Wild West right now, but we are working on maybe coming up with guidelines. And then once those are in place, you can't do that anymore. So just be ready for that. So yeah, they're still trying to figure things out. But the problem with NCAA is – there weren't any NIL guidelines because they were working on a system, according to Ross Dellinger, which pretty much had some antitrust issues. They were going to cap off the money you can make, you could get money from, yada yada yada. And then when it went to the Supreme Court, it passed 9-0 the Ralston case, and was pretty much like you can't put caps on them. They can go out in the free market and make as much as they want. If you do that, that you're going to be breaking labor laws, pretty much is how I've kind of comprehended that. And so it's a mess, obviously. But I think there's a lot of traction to get stuff fixed right now. You had Greg Sankey, SEC commissioner, Pac-12 commissioner, George Kliavkov, go to Congress and ask for help. So they're going in the right direction. We're going to have, you know, we're just going to have to see where that leads. And then what problems does that, this next solution create? Cause it's kind of a lingering effect here until we get some years into this.
There's always unintended consequences.
Well, we don't even know we don't know what the real market rate for these players is. Our company On3 has pretty cool tool, which is kind of like their name, image, likeness value, but the sample size is just not there. Right. Right. So you don't have a lot of cases to pull from. There's not a lot of data where we're like, oh, this is what you should expect, this is the value of so-and-so player. So there's, the market is just outrageous because of that. And so you're seeing some quarterbacks get paid $8.5 million. Is he worth that much? Maybe. I mean, it depends. Is your boosters going to be able to throw in that money, get that every year for players? Because thing with like these collectives is it's not just like a one-time big donation. You still have to go and dip back into that fund again and again. You have to keep donating these massive amounts of money if you're going to pay players this certain amount. So, like, that's eventually going to level off, you would assume. And so there's a lot of stuff to figure out. I mean, we're still going in blind on this. Getting a right leader there for the NCAA would probably be a step forward in the right direction.
Right, yeah.
But there's also scuttlebutt of – the Super League potentially happening, right? Notre Dame AD Jack Swarbrick says or believes that in the 2030s, the SEC and I believe the ACC are both up for TV renewals, TV contract. And the Big Ten is like going into theirs right now. I mean, the Pac-12 has got one looming. So, like, if they all decide to come together and be like, let's not sign anything big until we're all on the free market together in the 2030s, then you could see maybe the five power leagues or four power leagues might be with the Big 12 maybe backing out, kind of going off on their own and creating their own league. So there's a lot of stuff that's going to happen in this next decade.
Yeah, in the the thing to me to get back to the point of origin, a lot of the nil problems were because the NCAA was not out in front. Like they drugged their feet for so long that by the time the state legislators had their nil laws ready to go into effect, they couldn't do anything about it. Their hands were kind of tied.
Yeah, a lot of that went into the Ralston case. They were coming up with kind of their what they saw as right NIL guidelines. And then when that happened, they just said, F it, pretty much. You mm-hmm. all just go and do what you want to do. Let's sign Mark Emmer to a contract extension. Let him throw a couple more million in his pockets and ride out this. I mean, it's been bad leadership, obviously, for a while now. Not getting in front of the storm, mm-hmm. like you're saying. You're just walking in blind, we're just gonna have to the next 5 or 6 years. We're just gonna have to figure out what's gonna be best for college football and college athletics in general.
Yeah, in NCAA, the throwing the money at Emmert has just never made sense to me because he's not – they're running short on enforcement staff. So, like, if you want to keep having these rules, you have to enforce them or else nobody's going to abide by them. And that's the thing about the memo that I thought was the funniest part is it really was a just a warning without any teeth because they're still – in. Trying to adjudicate cases from 2 and 3 years ago. So, like, it's hard for anybody to take them seriously when pre-nil violations still have not been – I mean, Louisville, they're still dealing with their stuff. Kansas, you know, it goes on and on. So, right now, I think moving forward, if you look at it from UK standpoint, they have – kept their shop in line without the we'll take care of you once we get here, but we're not going to give you some guaranteed deal like rogue, some of these other places.
There's not the rogue agents, I think you would say, as there are in other places.
Right. So I think that in general, if anything, these places, the smart way to go about it is just don't go and start blabbering your deals off everywhere and telling the athletic about your operation, all this stuff. And you probably aren't going to get in trouble if you're able to keep things quiet. If you don't buy the pink Cadillac, then you're going to be all right.
Don't be like Tennessee and Miami is pretty much what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. Like, is anybody surprised that Tennessee and Miami are the ones flaunting their money the most? The funniest part of this all, the most ironic, is Tennessee – they totaled themselves about putting cash in McDonald's bags just to get rid of Pruitt, just so they could come up with a better way to pay players under a new coach.
Yeah, they just can't help themselves. I thought when that was first reported, I was like, why are they being this upfront with this? They can get the players to find out. I guess, it's Tennessee. And then Miami was just, I mean, they were announcing deals on Twitter. $800,000 guaranteed to your announcing a contract detail for Nigel Pack, a Kansas State transfer. So yeah, it's a different world.
And I think to get it back on track with Kentucky and its recruiting efforts. We haven't heard much at all from Kentucky this offseason. This has been the quietest offseason for leaks when it comes to recruiting, who's visiting, stuff like that. And I think it's because Kentucky would like to be operating under the radar, unlike your Tennessees and Miamis. The basketball program has been very loud about how we're not offering guaranteed deals and stuff. Kentucky's just, Stoops has mentioned – hey, we don't like what they're doing, but we're supportive of Nil. I think a lot of the quiet stuff, look at this, is maybe I'm being galaxy brain here. Maybe it's because we heard about the Jordan Addison reported deal for 800K to go to UK from a pit rival site. Maybe they're being much quieter because they'd like to handle their business where competing offers aren't going to knock them out of contention for some of these guys.
There definitely seems to be an information embargo going on. There's no leaks happening right now in recruiting. So there's new targets emerging all the time that quite frankly, I'm like a little stunned by. Not in a bad way, just that wasn't even in the realm of my view. Zion Childress, Texas State transfer. We've been told that they're not interested in any more transfers, but they are. Apparently they are interested in some transfers.
I think the day after that came out, you got the Jordan Robinson guy from D2, and then now they got another guy.
Yeah, I was going to bring up Jordan Robinson too. So that's two guys right there that was just like, oh, okay.
So you know there's got to be more, right? Like, and we're only finding out about them once the player comes public, you know?
And you have to – they've had a lot of success working in the shadows, specifically John Summerall and Scott Woodward, I would say.
Yeah.
Woodward pulled a big commitment in this class, Shamar Porter, which came out of left field. Summerall has had some big surprises. Josiah Hayes, obviously, Trevin Wallace. But so there's probably some prospects out there that we just don't even know about. And we're going to learn about them here over the next few months. But it's official visit season, Nick.
Mm-hmm.
Beginning in June, schools can host 2023 prospects on campus for official visits. You look around on Twitter for recruits and other schools, there are extravagant graphics about schools locking in official visits. The only one I've seen, like, confirmed so far is Kamari Burns, who's visiting June 6th. And that was reported by Alan True, who's kind of the Midwest 247 recruiting writer.
I think he's
so he got that in an interview.
Yeah.
Right. So there's just there's a lot of quiet stuff going on. Like there's just not getting out. So it's going to make covering this class a little difficult. At one time we thought this was going to be a strong in-state crop. Now it's seeming like Kentucky may have cooled on some of the in-state prospects. I believe Justin Rowland reported that Zadeek Clements, he's got two officials scheduled, but none to Kentucky. So that's kind of a sign, especially with if a summer announcement is the plan there, which I would assume it is. So, yeah, I mean, it's just strange. And I don't know what the reason for that is. Maybe it's – they think they can get in on some big fish. Maybe it's because this is going to be a small class. You know, maybe they loaded up last year when maybe they wanted to keep it smaller. Maybe they don't need a huge crop this year. Maybe they think they got some good traction for a potential big 2024 class. So yeah, so it's just interesting.
And especially because if you go to the back to the normal well, like Ohio, there's not a whole lot happening there. You know, you mentioned the defensive lineman, Kamari. It's Burns, right?
Out of Columbus.
Louisville's got a Kamari Land, so I get those two mixed up. And then Jermaine Matthews, he announced a commitment date today.
Anthony on July Brown 4th. Is the other big target in Ohio, too. Springfield wide receiver. I mean, those are kind of the three right now. And then there's an offensive lineman they've been poking around with. Let me find his name here on my spreadsheet. I'm just did some research on this kid today. It's not important, but there's another kid from Ohio, offensive guard. They're recruiting. So there's.
But the thing is,
traction,
hard,
but not a lot, right?
Right. Like we can only do so much with so little info, and there's just not a lot out there. And I think that's a concerted effort by Kentucky. And I would. More likely than not, I tend to believe that that's a good sign. just because of like what you said earlier, that Kentucky, when they work in the shadows, they typically do pretty well. But I just, we don't know what's back there, what's behind the curtain. And so it's going to be relatively quiet until we get those camps rolling around in June, where you actually just like start running into guys that are on official visits or guys that are camping. I know those camps, it'll be the first and second Sundays in June, the 3rd and 12th, or I want to say 5th and 12th. Yeah, that sounds right. The 5th and the 12th. So we'll obviously glean a lot more from those experiences, but I have a feeling that the month of May, we're not going to have a ton of recruiting revelations. And I don't think that's a bad thing, but you know what? June might roll around and there might not be a ton of kids on campus. And then that's when you might start scratching your head, because the one difference, if you look back on Kentucky's two most successful seasons, that 10 win season did not, they didn't sign a big class in 2019. And I believe that's the class that had all the kids transfer out. Right. That it, like half of them are already gone. Is that right? Like it?
Yeah.
That class essentially amounted to nothing. You needed 2 years to get that recruiting bump. Following this recent one, they signed a great haul while having that 10 win season. And you would expect that momentum to keep going if history is going to repeat itself. So I would think they're ahead of schedule, but we just don't know right now.
Yeah, the staff turnover, obviously. They just lost some really good recruiters when you look at Summerall.
Mm-hmm.
Wolford was making some big noise. And even before last year, losing Klinkscale, who was obviously landing some guys, especially in the Detroit area. So just a lot of turnover overall. And the guys trying to stabilize themselves. We still need to learn about Zach Yenzer as a recruiter. Chris Collins is still attempting to get established. So there's just a lot of moving parts there, right? So you got a lot of new staff, lost some proven guys on the recruiting trail, and then you add up the factors. Maybe Ohio and Kentucky are it's not as good as crop as maybe what once thought, and then it leads to maybe them trying to be quiet because they're in on some targets they don't want that getting publicized, and because of the success they've had, like we said, working in the shadows, maybe they prefer that. But I mean, we'll see. I mean, if they start getting hot here, I don't think they're going to be withholding information. We're probably going to hear a lot more of stuff happening. So we're just going to see how this thing develops.
Well, now that we've touched on recruiting a little bit, it is talking season. So we need to get to some talking. We've got our first few editions of preseason top 25s, including one from Mr. Adam Luckett. You put out a KSR's post-spring top 25, and the first thing I want to ask you about, Clemson, number 4, really?
Okay, so let's start here, right? Putting this together, like the easiest, like 1-2 is pretty easy. 1-2-3 is pretty easy.
Yeah.
But, Nick, like when I'm going through this, I had 1-2-3 was a tier. Mm-hmm. And I think Georgia was a distant third, at least right now. 4, 5, 6, and 7, these are all just kind of the prove-it teams. All these teams recruit at like a top 10 to top 5 level. So Clemson, I'm going to bet that was a blip on the radar last year. 10-3 still last year. They've had 3 consecutive top 5 recruiting classes. So I lean more toward that. But then you get to 8 through really through probably 25, maybe 22. I would say 8 through 22. I had Utah at 8, but I could have listened and you could have told me, well, I think Texas should be at 8. They got talent. They should be at 8. I would have been like, okay, maybe you're right. Or I think Oklahoma should be at 8. Or I think USC should be at 8. All these teams, I think, you're splitting hairs. And I think Kentucky's in that group. So you had to put them somewhere. So I ended up putting these teams in some specific order. And I tried to balance it out as best I could. But that's really what it is. I think this year more than any other, Nick, there is really – I think the top two teams are pretty clear. I think Georgia's right there behind them. But after that, that next group of probably 4 through 35, I think, is really close, which could make it an interesting college football season.
The thing with Clemson, it's and that's how it is with a lot of teams. It's a quarterback play, and I don't know.
Yeah, probabilities here, okay? They got 2 5 stars, right? Cade Klubnik's a guy people really like. Won the Elite 11 last year. If DJU stinks like he did last year, I think they have a legitimate option behind him.
Which they didn't have last year. Yeah, yeah. And the thing with DJU is I don't like to do that where you just toss out the horse's last race when handicapping. But, you know, if you're one of those that can, you could just say Georgia made everybody see ghosts last year, and he just could never recover after that opening game. Like, I could maybe be sold on that. But I also just love to hate on Clemson and Dabo, because Dabo's always got takes. That dude, he should pull a Tom Brady and just quit and get into TV, because he would be the ultimate just pairing. Imagine him with Stephen A on First Take. Like, that is what we need, because you want to talk about having some wild, absurd. Gosh, that would be.
Oh, we'll hear something from him this year, because he went on. We don't have to wait for this year. He went on a ACC morning show, Packer and Durham, Wednesday or Tuesday. It was pretty much like, yeah, they had the U-Haul out in front of my house. They weren't sending people to sit up. It was U-Haul. It was like, you get your stuff and get out. Like, Dabo, but we're not buying this right now, okay? You've won 2 national championships. Like, get out of here. But, yeah, he's going to have takes, especially on the transfer portal potentially. And if they're winning, he's going to snap back at everybody for saying he's maybe doing stuff the wrong way. So you're going to get all that. And, like, Clemson, man, you look at the defense. You look overall at their draft. They really didn't have a good draft. Kentucky had more draft picks than Clemson. Obviously, Justin Ross was a popular one, falling all the way out. But there was some other prominent players that went undrafted for them this season. But that's kind of twofold. A lot of reason for that is because a lot of them are returning. So you look at the defensive line specifically, they're going to be really loaded up front, and that can solve a lot of problems. And like I said, if they just get above average quarterback play, and Cade Klubnik looks like a guy that could potentially be an NFLer, you don't have to ride through DJU's 9 touchdown, 10 interception year again. You can actually get a guy in there at quarterback. So that would be my case on them.
Are there any teams that you're more bullish on, notwithstanding who we mentioned there at 8, but are there any teams you're much more bullish on than maybe you'll find in some other
preseason
top 25s?
I did this in the research. Like, I'm going to bet Minnesota to win the Big Ten West after doing some research on them. They survived the Mike Sanford Jr. experiment, right?
It's hard to do too, man.
They survived it with a big year last year. In the last 2 seasons, if you take out the COVID year, they're 20-6 in regular seasons with a 13-5 mark in Big Ten play. I bet a lot of people don't know that. Tanner Morgan's back again at quarterback, the Rye alum here in Northern Kentucky.
17th college football season.
He's been there forever. They're bringing Kurt Soraka back, who's worked with Fleck a long time. Their coordinator's been there a while. Mo Ibrahim, who played high school ball with Josh Pascal, is really good. They won all those games without him. He got hurt that first game of the year against Ohio State. He was having a monster game. He's good. They're good on the line of scrimmage. They've got a couple guys at receivers I like. All 3 levels of defense are pretty good. And, like, P.J. Fleck's just good. I mean, it's just – he's a good coach. And so we've seen kind of a revolving door in that Big Ten West. They seem like they have the pieces to maybe be the favorite to win that this year. And we've seen them beat all these teams recently. And so I think Minnesota – is a team you could look up, and they're 10-2, and Flex the candidate for the next blue blood job, whoever comes open after the season.
I will say PJ Fleck is he's one of those guys that rubs people the wrong way.
He's acquired taste. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily say Dabo, but like his shtick is not popular among the coaching community. But if Ibrahim's good, I mean, he was awesome in that Thursday night opener until he got hurt. if he can be good, I can see that happening. The one that I really wanted to push back on is Pitt being a good football team. Maybe it's because I think Kenny Pickett is going to be an outstanding quarterback for the Pittsburgh Steelers. You can't replace a legend like that. Didn't know Keaton Slovis ended up at Pitt. Where was he? Was he at USC last year?
Yeah, he was at USC, and then he got hurt. He's been hurt a lot in his career. That's really kind of stunted his growth. But he was the guy who replaced JT Daniels. JT Daniels blows out his knee. Keaton Slovis comes in and was awesome as a true freshman. Then was up and down after that. Very at SC. So he's at Pittsburgh now. Yeah, and you look at Pittsburgh. I would have been higher on them probably if Jordan Addison didn't move.
Right, right.
Which, I don't love that he changed offensive coordinators, but Narduzzi, defensively, they're putting guys in the draft consistently, especially on the defensive line. They've had three consecutive top 30 defenses. I think they could be really good on defense this year. So they're, if you're looking for Clemson's top competition potentially in the ACC, it's Pitt if Slovis comes in and plays well.
Two teams that I think are very similar in question marks, but also have a ton of potential, USC and Ole Miss, because even though, I mean, they just have so much turnover in the transfer portal, just so much, and you don't know how that's going to work out. From Ole Miss's perspective, they got the USC, former USC tight end, Michael Trigg, and they got a former USC quarterback in Jackson Dart. So you would think that they have enough talent there, but SEC West, you know, that can be an absolute gauntlet. And I could very well see this being a, you know, Lane Kiffin's name was kind of out there as like, oh, maybe Lane's on the move. Like that might have been,
sounds like to me.
Right. That might have been a, I'm trying to get out while the going's good, because they just had such a great season. And meanwhile, Mississippi State, like I could see Mississippi State being the best team in Mississippi and maybe the best team in the West to compete with Alabama for that title, not just because Will Rogers is back, but also that defense, it gives people fits. It really does. So I could almost see them being – that might be one more that's worth rolling the dice. I'm going to be interested to see when that win total comes out.
USC and Ole Miss are very similar to me in that they're so transfer heavy. It's going to be like half of their starters are going to be from the portal. That can either really hit well, like we saw with Michigan State last year, where they just hit a big home run with their transfer portal ads, or it could potentially go in the other direction. I think you could kind of throw LSU in this pot. And there's some other schools that have loaded up on the portal where they're just got a large variance because of that. Now Ole Miss, like, I look at them, and it's gonna be an interesting case study on Kiffin as a head coach to me, because they are gonna have to show some evolution here. They've got pieces on defense now, where this can be a good defense. So can that defense play to its potential? And there's a quarterback issue. Like if you watch the spring game, you probably didn't because you're not a crazy person like me. But both Jackson Dart and Luke Altmyer struggled to throw the ball in the spring game. At receiver, they have wide receiver questions. Kiffin straight up told the sideline reporter in the spring game that they're not good at receiver right now. They got to get better. They got to get a lot better. Jordan Watkins was maybe their top receiver in the spring game outside of Trigg. And Jordan Watkins was Louisville's probably second best receiver last year. Solid player, but he shouldn't be your top or one of your top guys, I would say. He's a good number three.
Right, right.
And so but they're going to have to lean into the run game. Like they should have a solid old line, and they added Zach Evans from TCU, who's got game breaking potential. So they're going to have to get, I think, a little bit more run heavy this year and lean on their defense some. So is he still going to be foot on the gas 100% trying to run 90 plays a game? Or does he try to slow it down, play this defense a little bit more, and use those stable backs he has? So I'm very interested to see Ole Miss, how they kind of adjust, because it's a big year, I think, for Kiffin, because the thing on him in his career was he's had big seasons. It's stability, layering together good seasons. So the great seasons can become a little easier to achieve, avoiding the roller coasters, the peaks and valleys. And so this is a big year for that. Can he do that? Will the portal help him do that? Can they keep winning consistently? Because that West Division, Alabama's going to win it, but after we think Alabama's going to win it, and A&M's the second most talented team, but after that, I mean, who knows what can happen in that division? Auburn and LSU are total wild cards.
Mm-hmm.
Mississippi State seems like they're rising with Mike Leach. Expectations are high for Ole Miss. Arkansas expectations are really high. A&M's someone's got to finish last there.
Recruited their faces off.
Right.
Know?
Someone's going to go 4-8, 5-7, 2-6 in the league. So who's it going to be? So we all think it's going to be Auburn, but if they surprise people, then who's going to replace them at the bottom? Who's going to be six if Auburn tanks? That sixth place team's not going to be happy. I'll tell you that right now. So the West, it's just watching how that unfolds is going to be very interesting to watch, I think. And a coach is going to go from in a really good spot to potentially on the hot seat, but that's just how that division works.
The if you look back through Lane Kiffin's resume, there are a lot of those seasons that pop. His second season at USC, 10 wins. Second season at Ole Miss, 10 wins. Kiffin's final two seasons at USC, 10 total wins. You know, so it can get away quickly. And now I don't want to say he's reached the promised land or a destination job, but you know, being at a program that was once very prolific. I mean, in the 60s, they were a national powerhouse, but like that's a place you can have some success for a long time if you do things right. And to kind of steer the conversation in one final direction, the scheduling, it's going to change soon. Our favorite summertime topic on 11 personnel, it's back. Pod scheduling. We got the pods back because among the kind of hidden behind the nil, hey, you be quiet, that the NCAA also moved to eliminate restrictions on conference championship games. As of right now, in order to have a conference championship game, it has to be the winners of two divisions if you have 12 teams or more. If you have less than 12, then you got to play a round robin schedule to do it, just like what the Big 12 has. By removing,
I didn't know that.
I didn't either. I just assumed that it was just the way that
how it worked. Yeah.
Right. Like that was just the everything coming to form. But that was an actual rule. They're going to remove that stipulation because when Texas and Oklahoma come to the SEC, that's going to be a 16-team conference, and you're just never going to end up playing everybody. So what it does is it opens the door for all of these big leagues to do what the ACC did during the COVID year, and that's play a little bit of everybody, teams with the best winning percentage, or maybe the teams that are the highest ranked in the college football playoff rankings will meet to determine a conference champion, which, Kentucky's benefited from the divisions, from the SEC East being lighter. If you look at the most recent odds to win the SEC, the four teams at the bottom are all on Kentucky's schedule, and three of them are in the East. So Kentucky's benefited from it. And if once these changes go into effect, it's probably, you know, still a year or two away, but it's coming. This move by the NCAA made it somewhat of an inevitability.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about it here for a couple years now. It's just only a matter of time. That's why it's really important for Kentucky. It's going to be easier to get the SEC championship now than it will be whenever this goes into effect. Well, the ACC is pushing for their change to happen in 2023. Greg Sankey has not been one to be behind the eight ball when it comes to some of this evolution.
No, not at all.
So this could be – I mean, conceivably, this could be the last year. If it's not the last year, it'll be whenever Texas and Oklahoma come in, right? So that could be 2023, it could be 2024, it could be 2025. We don't really know.
My guess, Luckett, on that is that 2024 is when the ESPN deal kicks in. My guess is it's then, because then they'll have more cash to be able to help them pay out of their exit early exit fee. But that's why the window – see, the window might just be this year for Kentucky to get to Atlanta. I don't want to sound
like now or never.
It's
right.
impossible, but, yeah. but like
you it's have just the, well, just you've the got odds the quarterback. Just, the odds are just better this year, right?
Yeah, you've got the quarterback. Eight home games. You get Georgia at home in the SEC finale in what November.
Could be winner take all.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, just looking on paper, Atlanta or bust. The game at Tennessee ain't going to be easy, but it feels like the time is now for Kentucky to take advantage of what they have going for them this year.
Yeah, it's all there. Obviously, there's got to be developments that are going to happen. Kentucky's going to have to win all their fair share of close games, obviously, but that they're going to have a chance, right? We think they're going to have a legit shot at maybe getting there if some things go their way. But we got to get there. The Will Levis buzz, draft buzz, is palpable.
Yep.
So that's obviously creating a bump here in the summer, heading into the year. Nick, I don't think we're really talking about it. I think this is more like a deeper summer discussion, but like this is going to be the most anticipated season that I can remember. I mean, maybe 07 was more anticipated.
Yeah, and there was a lot of hype for 18 because so many guys came back.
I think people were excited about 2020, but the pandemic hit.
Right, right.
Because you had a lot of pieces returning. But this is, of the Stoops era, this is going to be the most hyped up season. I'm very interested to see the season ticket sales this summer.
Yeah, yeah.
How are they progressing? Because I would assume that they're going to reach high numbers here. And it's not going to be an issue selling tickets.
No, you've got some good games at home. Got everybody's, Louisville at home, Georgia at home.
Mm-hmm. Everybody's kind of pointing that Georgia game, but there's also some other good games. You get good games in November this year.
Mm-hmm.
There's reasons to go to the stadium in November. You're playing Georgia in Louisville. It's not UT Martin at the end.
Right, right. Man.
So that's UT Martin, New Mexico State. That's exciting for fans. And it all leads to, like, Vince Merrill again in the interview with Matt Jones, Drew Franklin, Ryan Lemon on Oaks Friday. Brought it up again how the goal is pretty much to win the East and how they weren't ready in 2018. And I've talked about this before, but it wasn't just the team. I don't think us as a fan base was really ready for that either.
No, we weren't.
That whole year, I think, snuck up on everybody. We couldn't believe it. The way they won against Missouri was just crazy.
Right.
The way Kentucky was winning that year, I think a lot of people just had a hard time comprehending that, like winning with defense and running the ball.
Right.
Like that whole year was just like everybody's mind was in a pretzel. But now I think they've seen it now. Now there's a quarterback to believe in. Everybody's going to be all in. And like the big part about what I mentioned, the fan base wasn't ready. Like Georgia was in that stadium hard.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's why I bring up the season ticket sales. If that plays out like we think it could, that's a huge game in November. You know, if you got a high – if you don't have tickets to sell, it's harder for those folks to buy them. That can create a better atmosphere for the game.
Right, right.
Kentucky's going to be more ready to play. But I agree with Merrill on that sentiment. Like, they played a lot better, I thought, this past year. At Georgia, even though they were down 30-7 at one point. There were some moments in that game, if it breaks the other way for them, it's a lot closer. And Georgia was a juggernaut, obviously.
Right. Ball bouncing the right way. There was certainly more of a confidence on that UK sideline. And that's – I mean, if you look at just the trajectory of Stoops' tenure, the first few years, they just had to figure out how to win, how to close out those games, how to show up on Saturday and know that they have a chance. And that happens when you're playing against the juggernauts like Georgia. There was one assistant I was talking to who was like, yeah, you remember watching Wandale? He was running the same speed as everybody. We need more guys like that. They've recruited like that to get those guys. And the table set. The table set for an enormous season. And the exciting thing, Lucky, is we still got weeks and weeks to talk about it. We're about 110 days away from kickoff, I believe. So still a long ways to go, but plenty of time.
How do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. Right. So now we're in the summer months. Let's just take it, you know, it's big to dream, but step by step. Got time all summer to dream. Right now, it's about building the roster, right? Do we see Kentucky add another transfer?
No.
It's about 2023 recruiting. They really need to start creating some momentum here in the summer. That's how you get a bump into the season. Like, they really need to start getting some commits.
Taking those bites.
Gaining some traction.
Yeah. Taking those bites. Taking just a little bit bites. Of a tusk here, a little bit of trunk there, maybe an ear here. Elephant ears are delicious, you know. I don't think I can finish a whole one by myself. We can share an elephant ear. Put some extra powdered sugar on that thing.
He can get out to the what's it called? They're in Derby. They don't call it the food truck. Chow wagon. I was going to call it Derby food truck, which is kind of what it is. So didn't get out to that this year, but we'll have the fair this summer to get some of those elephant ears.
There we go.
But yeah.
There we go. Well,
more of a deep fried Oreo over here.
Oh, I can't blame you. Those things are amazing. But it's time. It's time for us to go. It's been a joy. Hope you all enjoyed hanging out with us and talking a little ball in the second week of May. Still got a long way to go, but we'll be biting that elephant all summer long. For Adam Luckett, I'm Nick Rush. Go Cats and go Kroger.